Welcome to Fire Protection Insights, the fire safety podcast brought to you by Ferguson Fire and Fabrication, the leader in fire protection innovation.
What happens when deep industry expertise meets expanded scale, shared innovation, and a multi-brand strategy built to serve customers better? Hi, I'm Justin Hassel, Business Development Manager at Ferguson Fire and Fabrication. Today's episode is all about growth, across borders, across brands, and across the fire protection industry. We're taking a closer look at the Canadian market, the value of a multi-brand strategy, and how Ferguson's acquisition of National Fire Equipment is creating new opportunities for customers, partners, and suppliers. Joining me is Sean Pierce, Vice President at National Fire Equipment. Sean is responsible for driving revenue growth as well as product and business development, and he brings more than 25 years of experience in the fire and life safety industry. He's also a veteran of the Toronto Fire Services, having served as a frontline firefighter, captain in training, and executive officer to the fire chief. Sean, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Justin. Good to see you, pal.
You too, bud. Yeah. So, Sean, I want to grab some background from you. You know, This acquisition between National Fire Equipment, Ferguson Wosley is new. We have a lot to learn from one another. So if you can you give me some basic information, our viewers, our listeners, some information, an overview of the company of National Fire Equipment in terms of its size, its geographic coverage, and then capabilities?
Yeah, for sure. So National Fire Equipment was started 65 years ago by Webster and his wife, Celine, and Dan and his brother, Keith, then took it over. And now Keith is retired and Dan was the last standing son that was running National Fire Equipment, Dan Webster, a good friend of mine. And in April of last year, Dan made the decision to sell the organization to Wosley / Ferguson Fire and Fab. And I think our business, aside from scale, mimics Ferguson in many ways. We have a couple of fab shops, one in Calgary in Alberta, one in here in Ontario. We're head officed here in Ontario. Our Concord warehouse would be our biggest warehouse. We sell a very diverse line of material, maybe more so than even Ferguson. If it goes into a building for fire protection, we try and touch it and sell it. If it's used in inspection test maintenance, we try and find a solution for it and get it out into the market. So the economy right now is doing some funky things here in Canada. There's a lot of geopolitical concerns around the world, and so we're seeing a downturn in condos. We were the strongest condo market in the world for a long time here in Ontario, and it was great for us from both from a fabrication perspective and from a product perspective. But as this shift is occurring and condos are slowing, we're picking up inspection test maintenance, you know, work from contractors. We're picking up warehouse and cold storage work and data center work. So the diversity really helps us weather the storm. We're not necessarily growing, but we're able to hold our own in fundamentally any market. So we have a branch in Atlantic Canada, which is the eastern seaboard of Canada. You guys, you know, like Boston, that kind of area, but due north of that. And we have a branch in Ottawa, Ontario, which is our national capital. We have a branch here in Concord, our fab shop in Mississauga. And then we start to move out west and we have a branch in Edmonton and Calgary, Alberta. And then we have a branch in British Columbia, and Calgary has a fab shop as well. So
two fabrication sites, correct?
Exactly. Yeah.
And seven locations.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And we're, you know, there's some holes in the market for sure. But, you know, we'd love to be.
Well, Canada's big. It's hard to cover it all.
It's funny. I mean, I worked for Lubrizol, big chemical company in the yep. U.S., and they had some people covering, you know, like, I don't know, call it 12 people covering the U.S. and me covering Canada. And it
overwhelming.
Overwhelming. Like. Yeah. Geographically overwhelming, right? I mean, population wise, we're nowhere near as big as the U.S., but geographically, it's a monster for sure.
Yeah, I bet. That's cool. So, I mean, I've met Dan, great guy. I haven't met anyone else outside of the group. Unfortunately, didn't get to meet Tom and all them. But it seems like you guys as a whole, I mean, it's a great company. You know, all the people you have working there have been fantastic to work with so far. Everyone's been helpful. It does seem like everyone is pretty well versed in the business, you know, per se. Like I can go to anyone and ask them a question and they have some input, which is really neat. As an organization starts to grow, it is hard to maintain that close feeling, you know? So I think that's cool about National Fire. You touched on something there for a second, and I really do want you to dive into it. So, you know, since Ferguson acquired National Fire, you guys represent quite an array of brands, you know, as we love to call that a multi-brand approach, right?
Yeah.
What does it really mean in practice? You know, and why do you think it's beneficial for our customers?
It was interesting because I'd never really thought about being multi-brand until Ferguson brought that phrase up. And then I thought, well, we've kind of been doing that all along. And so this year, as I was building out some concepts for our sales teams to move out into the field with, I thought about multi-brand and what it means. And I came up with another phrase called interoperability. And so what we do is sell series of components from various manufacturers to get our customers an affordable, highly reliable system that they can install. So, you know, General Air, we have a great relationship with our friends at General Air. We buy compressors and air maintenance devices. A lot of times people will match their AMD with their valve. We're saying we got a great product from General Air. It's affordable. Let's match our compressor with our AMD, and then let's move to our dry valve. And then from there, you know, we all buy pipe. You know, it's a commodity. So you get what you can get at whatever price you can get. But then we've been selling ASC Anvil for a long time. So you get Anvil groove and fittings, Tyco heads, and we blend our products, but they're all interoperable. So there's no issues with them. They're all listed. But then beyond that, the hoses that go into the cabinets in the buildings or the valves that go onto the standpipes in a building, depending on what municipality you're in and, you know, what their expectations are code-wise. Some of that is house brand for us that we bring in and import for ourselves. Some of it is from other partners like Giacomini or other people, depending on what size it is and what the market needs. For us, it's about providing a customer with the best possible product mix at the best price so that, you know, life safety is important. You know, for me, we're in the life safety business. We're not in the distribution business. How do we get the best products in the hands of our customers so that they can be comfortable with what they're installing? And it doesn't necessarily mean you get it all from one manufacturer. Sometimes that's a shortcoming.
That's a good phrase. I like that. Coin it, obviously. But when I look at that approach, you know, what I see out of that is you're able to offer a customer the entirety of the project regardless of the products that need to be installed, right? So
Correct. That's
where an outfit like yours and Ferguson's as well is able to be applicable to so many projects. We're not so much constricted by a short line card per se. You know, we can get on any project, we can supply it with any run of manufacturers, any type of products, and be adaptable for the customer so they can have the best service for the end user. So I do think, you know, this multi-brand or this multi-operable approach is definitely one that, you know, gets undervalued sometimes, especially when considering a partner in our industry. So I like that.
I would agree. I think we, you know, beyond that, so we think about like sprinkler like that. So the wet side of the fire protection industry, and we think about being interoperable there. But then, you know, we sell car fire blankets it's the same contractor that's doing the inspection on the building, has an EV charging station in a underground parking garage. They're looking for a solution, you know, so we're giving them all the things that they need to support their customer base, but to be profitable as well. And that's where this concept of, we don't have customers, we have partners. How do we help them be profitable?
Yeah. And I think a lot of our customers and our partners, as you say, I think something that we have to constantly remind them of is just the fact that we have access to everything. You know, I forget that myself working here. Yeah. You know, I tend to start looking for something online that I need, not knowing that we already have it.
Yeah.
That happens a lot.
Yeah.
So sometimes I pause and go, okay, well, you know, we're Ferguson or we're, you know, National Fire. Like, I'm sure we probably have that already.
So yes.
It's neat to see how that huge catalog can kind of be beneficial, but also reminding our customers and ourselves of what all is included in that catalog. So I guess, you know, the next question too I have is, because I'm not familiar with the Canadian market, and I know that it is different with regards to projects, customer base, code acceptance, you have it. So from like your perspective, what is the current state of the market in Canada, and where do you see the greatest opportunities?
We were very lucky for a very long time to have the population growth that we were having, and it drove residential construction predominantly in Ontario, in the greater Toronto area, in Vancouver. And then it started to drive it in Alberta. Alberta seems to be hanging on to that population growth. It's housing has become very, very expensive in Toronto and the British Columbia markets. And so we're seeing a slowdown there for sure. What's amazing to me is, you know, we're down about 40% in condo construction in Toronto, but we still have 140 cranes up. So when people talk, we had 400 cranes up at one point, right? So it was absurd, you know, that we couldn't find fitters. Ontario is a compulsory certified trade for fire protection. So you have to be a licensed sprinkler fitter in order to touch a building in Ontario, you know, and that's fundamentally the case across most of the country. So we had staffing shortages. The training centers were doing their best to get people through and get them, you know, get them at least starting their apprenticeship. There was a lot happening, but, you know, things have slowed a little bit for sure. And we have a few guys available for work, which we haven't had in many, many years, but we're still busy. We're still there's this interesting concept when I've had good fortune to work with a lot of people from the US, and they talk about Canada being 10%. So there's this mindset, Canada is 10% of the American market. And that, so they could kind of treat us like we're 10%. We're, you know, I have two big brothers and I know what it feels like to be seen as the little brother. So you kind of get that sense. But a lot of people forget that Toronto and the greater Toronto area is the fourth largest city in North America. And so we have this mega market similar to New York, similar to LA, similar to Mexico City, that is, you know, really driving our economy. And so as much as, yeah, we're 10%, there's no question, we have a mega market and it sucks up a lot of material.
Yeah. Well, and I would say, you know, some of that perspective is the same internally for us, right? You know, we're Ferguson Fire is the smallest entity of the Ferguson group, but
right,
we're the largest in the market, you know?
Yeah.
So it's like, we are the little brother per se, but again, you know, what we do impacts the market. You know, these partnerships that we have, these acquisitions, they really start to unfold the industry. And I do think that, you know, at the heart of it, it's pretty critical, even though we're a small part. And I think our industry is as a whole too, right? When I tell people what I do, it's often blank looks of, what is that? You know?
Well, yeah. What does that mean?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 100%.
So I have to keep that into perspective, right? Like, we are a small portion of the pie, but we're a very meaningful portion of the pie. And I think it's the same like with your group, right? So, you know, your market and your area being resilient, it definitely makes state as to why, you know, National Fire's done so well and continues to do so well. I want to pivot here real quick, Sean, because I think I skipped over this, but your standing career is pretty extensive in our industry. And I want to kind of hit on that for just a second. So you were in the fire service world for a while. Can you tell me a little more about that?
There's this thing about fire protection, right? Once you're in, sometimes people go out, they leave for a little while, but they always come back. Once you're in fire protection, it's impossible to get out. So I started prior to the amalgamation of the city of Toronto. There were six municipalities that amalgamated to form the new city of Toronto. And I started in the second largest city in North York as a probationary firefighter 34 years ago now, when I stepped onto a tailboard of a truck for the first time and worked my way through the department to be the fire chief's XO. That's my helmet over my shoulder up there. Yeah. And had a great mentor in Bill Stewart, the fire chief at the time. And I got to work on some code changes with him and doing some different things Firefighting's amazing. It's a great profession. I have a lot of friends still from that profession, but I was able to work with Bill and other people at Toronto Fire on influencing a code change, a provincial code change to put sprinklers in high-rise buildings. And a light went off that we just potentially saved millions of people, not one or two at a time, but potentially we saved millions of people. And I got really interested in that side of fire protection and joined the Sprinkler Association here in Canada, got to work on compulsory certification for the sprinkler trade, which I felt was important. And then retrofitting care homes in Ontario as well and getting a fire code change there. So code change has really become, and driving code change has really become a part of who I am. And I've been fortunate that I've always, anybody that I've worked with, they've always said, yeah, keep doing that because we know you're passionate about it. We don't want to take that away. Just keep working on that stuff. So I've been very lucky. I also sit on 7 UL committees as a technical committee member. So like 199 and a couple lithium ion committees now too. And I have some great friends at UL. I got to spend some time testing there when I spent 7 odd years with Lubrizol and doing R&D work at UL. And so I got to see that. Yeah, other side. There's some photos behind me. I love burning stuff. You know, anybody who's ever ridden the back of a fire truck, they love burning stuff. I'm no different. There's no getting away from that. And then Dan and I were out with some friends and he had some people retire and we talked about me joining the national fire team and it brought me closer to home from a travel perspective and gave me some opportunities. And now I feel like my opportunities have grown again to be a part of the Ferguson team. You know, there's so many amazing people. You and I have got to spend some time together. The one thing I love more than anything is learning. And I find you learn more in the short conversations you have. You can absorb so much information in these 5-10 minute conversations rather than sitting down and trying to take a course. And there's so many people out there that are smarter than me that I can learn from. And it's great. And I feel like I'm every day I learn something new. And then I try and share it with my team and anybody else who's willing to listen.
And I agree with you, right? I applaud you for having 25 years plus experience in this industry and still have the understanding that no matter who you sit down with or talk to, you could learn something. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, today I still feel that way when I travel and see people, customers and, you know, talk to people at events and stuff. It's fascinating what you can learn from their perspective or their history.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then how it applies to what you're either doing today or doing in the future. And, you know, you mentioned your involvement in UL and standards and stuff like that. You know, are there any, if you're speaking to the audience here, are there any like code development or standards that you think contractors, engineers should start paying closer attention to going forward? I mean, I know you've had a lot of involvement in the lithium ion world, and that seems to be a tremendously hot topic. PFAS, there's all kinds of things, you know, but from your perspective, what are you hearing?
I think NFPA 13, 13R, 13D, that code cycle, you know, every 3.5-4 years, we get a new standard for that standard and for 25. And I think that adoption is odd, right? Because those aren't laws, they're standards. So our building codes, our local building codes, whether you're in Canada or the US, they decide which version of that standard they're going to use and adopt. There's a lot of codes, both in Canada and the US, that are now adopting as published, which is great. But making sure you're up on those codes is critical because things are changing and you can get behind on something. And the beauty of those code committees, those standard committees, rather, a lot of really smart people who love fire protection and love life safety, and they see gaps in them, and they're constantly closing the gap. And you can get left behind if you're not, you know, paying at least some attention to those standards. And then understanding how your local building code adopts those standards is critical because I find there's a big gap there. You know, Ontario, where I live, they don't adopt the most recent standard in the building code. The code cycle kind of catches up to what NFPA and various other groups are doing. But we have we have an extra layer here called the Standards Council of Canada who drive this kind of adoption. And so we in Ontario, a lot of people don't know about that group, but they prescribe who certifies product for Canada. And so, yeah, so they're an important group too. So I don't think there's anything like that in the US, but making sure you understand the nuances of how standards and codes communicate, I think, is critical. And your AHJs will appreciate it because they're living the world of law. They're living the world of building codes, which is fundamentally the law that we play by, and the standards all feed into those codes.
Yeah, I think that's great advice because, you know, as anyone who has to cover beyond a local market, you realize that everyone has different degrees of code adoption.
Correct.
And with the vast changes that we've had over the last decade in the standards, that can be greatly different as to how you protect a property or how you inspect a system, you know?
Correct.
And not to say that, you know, if you're looking at it from a sales perspective, are we apples to apples? But if you're looking at it from a basic life safety perspective, you know, are we utilizing the resources, the technology, and the research that's been done to properly put something in place? Because I think that gets overlooked sometimes. You know, some of these products and concepts come to market, and there's been extensive research behind them to address some of these problems that the industry as a whole has had. And to not consider them and look into that, I think is just kind of a misjunction on our part, you know, which kind of like leads me into my next question here, or my next pry into your insight would be, do you see specific products in the market that you guys are paying close attention to, like systems such as special hazards, water mist type systems, design services, engineered equipment, or are there anything like that that's in the Canadian market that you guys see gaining traction?
Yeah, I mean, you know, SFFF foam, you know, the synthetic, the fluorine-free foams, massive push. You guys were out ahead of us on that in the U.S. market. The U.S. Navy, I think, was probably the first to do a bunch of testing on that and then start to drive change. Issues within that that have to be addressed. You can't just pour new foam in because it contaminates it. You still have fluorine. So there's a whole exercise in redesigning a system and viscosity. A listed antifreeze, you know, there was a huge push not so long ago on antifreeze, and listed antifreeze is another thing. I'm about to do a presentation in a week or so on the importance of competition, and a whole bunch of people have been asking me questions because there's a belief that I'm going to talk about why National Fire is better than everybody else, but that's not what it's about. It's about making sure that everybody is competitive in a market and reasonably profitable so that we can drive innovation, because it costs a fortune to go to UL. And so if you end up with one manufacturer that's, you know, 40% stronger than everybody else, innovation dies. It, you know, all the costs that it takes to run a business, innovation is one of the first things that dies off. And fire protection and life safety, we really need our vendor partners to be innovating more now than ever before and finding that thing that's going to make life safety easier to provide. And so that presentation I'm doing, it's more about that. It's about how our legal system works around competition and things like that. But it's more about how do the vendors who are making this product stay profitable and drive innovation.
I think that's a great point, because I do think, you know, there are some concepts that come to market that the industry has put a lot of research behind. A lot of these vendors, manufacturers have put a lot of financial efforts into to benefit our end consumer, which is life safety, which is people in general, right?
Right.
And I do think to ignore that is a shortcoming on some of our parts, you know?
Yeah.
I do think, you know, that's where the competition comes in. Like you do have to acknowledge a great product or a great concept and support it to market, because it only leads everyone else to innovate further, you know?
100%.
Because you take a product like a sprinkler head, it has been around for over 100 years and it's still used today.
Yeah.
You know, you can't really look at a product besides the wheel that's been the same thing since inception, right?
Yeah.
So I do think that we all need to play a big part in just recognizing the new comers to the industry, the new concepts, and putting some focus on them and some support so we can all kind of innovate for the end goal, which is to make life safety better.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, I think you guys do it really well. Something that I know Ferguson here in the States is looking forward to gaining more knowledge on. And that's the array of fire protection equipment, you know, particularly extinguishers, firefighting equipment. Like, you guys do a really good job of being involved in those categories. Can you give me some examples of kind of things that you guys do that, you know, we think we can probably learn from?
I have this philosophy around, there's a lot of social marketing that goes on in sales in general. It doesn't matter whether it's fire protection or bread. It's irrelevant. There's a ton of social marketing that goes on, and sales is relationships, and you build relationships. I have this philosophy that I believe in, is that every time we interact with a customer, there has to be an educational component. And so we do things slightly, you know, the concept of a lunch and learn. We make sure we're covering multiple topics with our vendors, have product there for people to touch and feel. We do an engineering training event where our vendors come into Toronto. We have a big room and they all come in and talk to 30 odd engineers about what they're innovating on. A lot of times the stuff that they bring to the engineers isn't even available for sale yet, but they're getting this mutual feedback. So they're hearing from the engineers, oh, that's a cool concept. Yeah, I think it's something I could use. Or, yeah, I don't think that's going to work. And, you know, here's why. And so there's this mutual growth that happens at that event. And it's we're going into our fourth year and people are excited about it. We get more and more people wanting to come to it. And there's this massive educational component. So it's working for us to mix education with some kind of leisure component where you get to sit down and have a chat with people as well. But for me, that's the key. If we look out in BC, or Edmonton or Calgary, we take customers to a hockey game and we take, you know, 20, 30 of our best customers to a hockey game. We have a box, we have dinner with them. A component is our vendors come in and do training on some new stuff that they have. So while we're having dinner or whatever the case is, we integrate training into that. And then we go do a social activity together and we have a good time and it's great. And the vendors are part of that. And the thing I've found is when the vendors do a presentation and then are part of the social component afterwards, that's where most of the information exchange happens. They hear tidbits of stuff that they like in the presentation, and then they can just sit and talk to that person for half an hour and get everything else they need.
So I agree with you. I think, you know, the general presentations are great. They stir up ideas. They get the room humming.
Right.
It's afterwards where you have the individuals who may have been too reserved with raising their hand. That have right. a question, right?
Yeah.
That those questions come to light, you know, in interaction, and you think, I've never thought of that, you know, or that's a great idea.
Yeah.
I know that comes to light a lot for me. You know, it's the socializing afterwards where I can sit here and let my guard down and say, hey, I understood what you said, but what do you think about this? Or yeah. I've had this scenario come up. Is this where I would apply that? You know, and I think that's where you really start to stir the really good, you know, thinking. And I think I do agree with you. There's nothing like getting a whole bunch of passionate sprinkler people together.
100%. You know, yeah.
The ideas that come across, the conversations that come up. I mean, we can talk forever.
Yeah.
Of course, any other stranger that walks in that room probably thinks, who are these people?
Yeah, what's wrong with these people?
Yeah, right.
A room full of sprinkler nerds. Everybody looks at us like we're nuts, but
until we show them how it works,
exactly.
Then it's like, whoa,
yeah,
yeah. You know?
Yeah, you're right.
Until you show them like a side by side burn or an actual extinguishment or something, then it's like, okay, this is cool.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
So
yeah, I agree completely.
You know, something I want to ask you kind of on the flip side of where that question originated is, are there things that Ferguson has that National Fire is looking to build upon to kind of broaden their horizon with the fire and fab industry as a whole?
Yeah, I think you guys do so much well. And 30 years ago, a year was a long time. But today, a year goes by so fast in my life. And I feel like looking at how you operate your fabrication business, it is lean. It's mean. You're doing things differently. I'm seeing that you're working on ventilation pipes for data centers, you know, using various plastics. And like there's so much opportunity for us to learn about that expanded fabrication model that Ferguson has and get better at that. There's absolutely no question. And then there's the resources, the people like yourself. We can sometimes struggle to access certain resources. But a year ago, Wally Quigg and Jeff Key were in Toronto to announce the acquisition. It happened to be the same day as our engineering event. And I don't know if they remember this, but I introduced them and I told all these engineers, many of them that I know, I said, and what was interesting was their response. I said, we have bench strength now. Because the, you know, this 10% thing and how Canada's seen, it's hard to push change. And the engineers in the room, they knew what I was saying. Ferguson represents bench strength for us. There's this incredible talent pool at Ferguson of people that we can lean on and lobby with to affect change that improves life safety. And I'm not done with you guys. There's so much more that I want to try and achieve with Ferguson, you know, both for the Canadian market, but the U.S. market together jointly and other places in the world, because I know we both ship to outside of our home market. So, you know, there's so much there that we can leverage and be a part of.
I think we're kind of just getting started, you know, Sean.
Yeah.
Like, I think with any acquisition, there's a honeymoon phase where we're just kind of getting comfortable and we're trying to figure out, you know, how do you guys operate? What do you guys do? You know, how do we operate? What can we do for you? I think we're still kind of in that phase. And I think, but we're putting plans together to hopefully start ramping up towards this intermesh that's going to be beneficial for both. Because I know as I look at your category of products that you guys sell well, it's stuff that we haven't really considered, you know?
Right.
But as we dig in, there's a market for it here. So we were leaning on you specifically and your team to figure out, okay, how do we engage in that properly in here in the States?
Yeah.
And how do we do it the right way for our customers like you guys have done? You know, and I think the other way around too, you know, how can we come to your door and say, you know, here's what we do and what can we offer you guys to improve? You know,
right.
And like you said, you know, you and I have done a tour of, you know, some of our new facilities, and I even get pretty amazed at some of the stuff we have in there with regards to our fabrication process, how clean some of the shops are, the automation that we have, the things that have gone into creating that service at the next level.
Right, absolutely.
Simple things. Some of them are complex, but at the end of the day, I think we both can agree what we're trying to put out in the field is a good quality of product and service that gives the customer a sense of pride and comfort in what they're putting in and also what they're offering the customer. So I do think we align very much on that message. And I would say, you know, looking ahead as we continue to build this partnership, you know, across North America in a whole, what do you think our next steps are towards achieving that stuff?
I think integrating like we've started to do. You know, I've been very lucky because I've kind of been the tip of the spear on that integration. But we have some really amazing people here at NFE. And I'm meeting, you know, I've had the good fortune to meet a number of people like yourself and John. And there's so many people, Ryan and, you know, Jeff, of course. But that integration and people understanding the depth of the resource that Ferguson provides us, and how we take that to the market and to our customers and how important that is to our customers. I don't think our customers understand the depth of what Ferguson is, right? And making sure that we get that message out. And then from the other side, the things that we do well, how do we get the people who are looking after that for us talking to the right people at Ferguson so that you can take that and, because you have to scale it up. take what we're doing and scale it up at Ferguson so that it's effective for you. And I think that's the next phase. And I think together we can offer the market in North America and abroad solutions that will make their lives easier, provide better life safety, you know, without limiting people's options. And that concept of multi-brand, that's where now everything's available. You're not stuck, right? And I tell our customers, yeah, you can go buy this from here and that from there and this from here. They're doing, you know, multi-brand already, but I can do it for you. And now your fitters come down and empty one truck a day, not three, right? I can do that already for you. I can bring you all that mixed product and you get more work time out of a day because you're emptying one truck a day. And so I think how we both do that and learn from each other, I think that's the next steps on how we advance.
I agree. I relate to like my contracting days. There was times where we were offering the customer the same thing over and over.
Yeah.
And then we realized they're going to another party for these other things that are within our industry.
Yeah.
You know, why don't I just provide a number for that? You know, I can get it. Just provide a number for it. And, you know, wouldn't you know, that is just like one less stop for them, you know, one less contract to write up, one less source to go after. So naturally it's sure, you know, just provide all of this stuff for me within reason and I'm good to go, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's the learning behavior that we definitely work towards is how do we expand our offering to a customer who's doing all of these things, you know?
Right.
How do we service them to where they can say, I can go to this source and I can have an array of selections for any and everything I can provide to a contractor? And that goes with beyond our market. You know, we talk about this as a whole with Ferguson is providing an entire job site solution, you know, from not only our trade, but mechanical, you know, plumbing, infrastructure, you name it. To look at an outfit and say that they can provide that is substantial, you know.
Agreed.
For me, as a consumer, I want to purchase one thing from someone and not all the pieces and put it together myself.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't have time for that.
Right.
So I think there's a benefit there. And I think our partnership and our growth in our industry is where we're putting those pieces together. And I look forward to it for sure. So
Yeah, me as well.
Yeah.
Me as well. So I just glanced up at the clock. I was told we had 20 minutes. We're at 40.
Yeah.
You know, so I can keep talking to you, eh? Like we could talk.
We both can, Sean. I think that's where you and I, you know, we're just two sprinkler nerds in a room here, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Nobody's jumping in to stop us. This could go on forever.
Yeah. No, well, Sean, it's always great talking to you. And I've got to get up there, of course.
Yeah.
You know, we need to mingle more. We have a lot of things going on. So more to come, but I do appreciate you joining the show today. And it's been enlightening. And I look forward to more partnership with you.
Yeah, me as well, Justin. Pleasure. Always a pleasure, buddy. Always. Yeah, you know what? That concept of learning, I learn from you every time we sit down. So I appreciate it, pal.
Awesome. Well, and I'll have to get on your show, right?
100%. Yeah. If anybody hasn't heard about Between Two Extinguishers, okay, have a look on YouTube. Have a laugh. Yeah, it's good.
Awesome. Well, thanks, Sean.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
That wraps up today's episode of Fire Protection Insights, the Fire Safety Podcast. A big thank you to Sean Pierce for sharing his perspective on the Canadian fire protection market, the power of multi-brand strategy, and what's next for National Fire and Ferguson Fire and Fabrication. And thank you to our audience for listening in. Don't forget to subscribe to the show so you don't miss an episode. Until next time, I'm Justin Hassel, and this is Fire Protection Insights, the Fire Safety Podcast, brought to you by Ferguson.